This is Real Life with Lisa Jesswein on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Lisa Jesswein.
Okay, so the show's called Real Life, and it doesn't get any more real than the topic we're talking about today because it affects absolutely every single one of us. We're going to talk about relationships today, right? We have all kinds of relationships, love, relationships, work, relationships, family, friend, and sometimes those relationships need a little bit of reparative therapy, which is why we asked Dr. Susan Campbell, co-author of the 5-Minute Relationship Repair book, to come on in and talk to us. Hi, Susan, how are you?
Great, Lisa. Thanks for having me on the show.
Absolutely, because right now everybody's pulling their chair in a little closer because they're taking some notes, going, all right, I'm going to try this out on my husband. I'm going to try this out on my wife, see if this works. So first of all, I want to find out, do some of the methods here in the book also translate over to work, family, or friend relationships as well as love relationships?
Yes, they do. In fact, when I sent the manuscript first to my publisher, she's a single woman, and she said, why is it just for couples? And she said, it's really not. And we know it's not just for couples. She said, I used all these tools with my family to clear the air and get closer to people, and they worked. So, and I've used them between parents and children because, you know, children can push your buttons. And what do you do when your kids push your buttons or when your own parent pushes your buttons? So all relationships, work, love, friendship, family. Whole bit.
Okay. Now, your publisher probably looked at you with one eye cocked saying, 5-minute relationship repair? Really? Really? So let's talk about the title for just a minute. Can you repair things in 5 minutes?
Absolutely. In fact, Lisa, most people, what they think of as repair, they take longer than 5 minutes because they're doing it all wrong. They're trying to go back to the original incident where there was a misunderstanding or a blow-up or a shutdown, and they go back over it and they say, well, here's what I really want you to know. You know, you wouldn't be so upset with me if you really understood where I was coming from, but they just go ahead and explain themselves over and over, and that doesn't lead to good repair, the explaining part. So what we teach is a very simple method that can be used in actually less than 5 minutes once you learn the vocabulary. So there might be about 2 or 3 hours of reading over the processes in the book to learn the vocabulary, and then once you've got it, you can fill in a little repair script. It's like a fill-in-the-blank, you know, if I had it to do over, I would have told you, mm-hmm. like, my real feelings, and I would have told you that I need reassurance that my fears are not happening. You know, I need reassurance that I am important to you or that I am good enough for you. So we break it down into core feelings and needs, keep it very simple. It can actually be delivered in less than 5 minutes once you get the hang of it.
Okay. And the book distinguishes between that, the core feelings you just talked about, and reactive feelings. So what's the distinction about and why is it important?
Well, so often we get caught up in kind of a, I don't like that, and you're to blame. So those are the reactive feelings, the harder, sharper feelings that are kind of finger-pointing feelings, versus underneath those harder, sharper feelings, there's like just basically emotional pain, the pain of not feeling connected usually, not feeling heard, not getting some really basic needs met. So usually the core feelings are softer and more vulnerable, like pain and fear, like fear that I'm not important to you, that sort of thing. So once we take people through the different exercises to identify, okay, here's your reaction and here's the feeling that goes with your initial reaction, but if you stay with that upset feeling, that push away feeling a little bit longer, you usually soften and feel what really needs to be said, which is a little bit deeper and closer to your core.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talk about staying, this made me laugh, staying on your own side of the net in communication. What is that all about, and why should we stay on our side of the net?
What it means is speaking only about your own feelings and thoughts instead of telling the other person what their motives are, what they feel, or what they should do. See, in reality, you can only be honest about yourself, about your own feelings and your own desires. But people like to think that they know why other people act as they do. So often you will wind up telling somebody else what their motives are. Like, I can see that look on your face, and I see that you're angry at me. And you don't see that. You imagine that, or you fear that. And so once you start jumping over on the other side of the net and telling the other person what they're feeling or what their motives are, then you're a little bit on thin ice here. And it's likely to push your partner's button unnecessarily, and it's not the deepest level of truth. Because I actually think that when you're predicting and assuming what you think the other person really means by their communication, you're trying to have more control over the situation than you really have. And in our work, in the 5-minute relationship repair work, we counsel people to be very humble about the mind's need, the ego. We call it the ego mind. The ego mind's need for certainty and predictability, because really the other person is a mystery over there. And we recommend staying open and saying, this is what's going on for me. What's going on for you? And so you inquire about the other person's experience. You care about it, but you don't just assume you already know. Because that leads to stereotyping your partner. You know, he always says that, or I knew you were going to say that, and, you know, all the eye rolling and here we go again things that create disconnection between partners.
Everybody knows the phrase, when you assume, you make a out of you and me.
Yeah.
Everybody knows
right.
that, right?
That's a good one.
And now, what do you, this statement where it says, you know, sometimes this will happen in arguments, it'll say, well, it's not what you said, it was the way you said it.
Well, you know, if an argument starts that way, there is something to that, because, you know, you could say, okay, it's a control pattern. We use the term control patterns, you know, like just to reject whatever the person's saying, you know, it's just the way you said it. So some people use that as a one-size-fits-all resistance to your partner. But truly, the way people say things is a very important piece of communication. And so often we have found in our getting triggered response, like that knee-jerk reaction to your partner eye-rolling or maybe saying something in a very hard tone of voice that reminds you of how your father always used to try to boss you and control you and criticize you, you know, that some kind of tone of voice that symbolizes something from your past. Those things are significant. It's not like it's your partner's fault because your partner's using that tone of voice, but it's an information piece about my own sensitivities. If that tone of voice is upsetting to me, it's a good thing to accept, because we do get triggered by things as subtle as looks on the face or tones of voice or lack of eye contact or even too much eye contact for some of us.
Oh,
we get triggered by all these subtle things, and it's really important for each of us to accept and know what our triggers are, and a lot of them are nonverbal things.
Right.
Like, really know what triggers you. Like, okay, a harsh tone of voice triggers Eric. We have Donna and Eric in the book, and they're a typical couple. And when he hears a harsh tone of voice, he imagines criticism. So that's kind of typical.
All right. And so when you notice, okay, one of my triggers is happening, I can feel my stomach's going into a knot. I can feel the pressure rising. I know my face is turning red. What are you supposed to do if you notice you're being triggered?
Well, first, I want to counsel people to accept that we all have these triggers. And it's good that you described it that way, Lisa, because it's something we can all recognize. It happens to every human being at some point. So accept it, and then it'll be a lot easier for you to recognize what your own personal early warning signals are of being triggered, like that rapid heart rate, or hands getting clammy, or you feel like the blood all just drained right out of you into the ground. You know, you just feel weak. Whatever your early warning signals are, it's good to know them, pay attention to them, and then stop the action. Don't keep talking. Don't keep arguing or trying to prove your point, because you'll just dig yourself deeper into a hole.
Okay, so somebody walks away then, trying not to get triggered, the partners, like, you don't want to listen to me, or, you know, I'm trying to play out these scenarios where if you're trying to take care of yourself and not get triggered and you need to remove yourself from the situation and your partner wants to communicate but is not noticing that you're getting triggered. Do you see what I'm saying?
I sure do. The point that would be right after, if I kept talking, the point I would have made is you need to stop talking by mutual agreement.
Ah.
It's not like just walk out on your partner.
Right.
In other words, the two people realize, hey, this triggering thing has gotten a little out of control in our relationship. We get into these vicious cycles where the communication just seems to go round and round and we never resolve anything. Instead of that, when either of us starts to feel overwhelmed or flooded with emotion or one of those little trigger signals, either of us can call for a pause, which means a temporary pause, and it's like we make up a signal. The word can be whoa or timeout, or it can be the timeout hand signal. Each couple makes up their own unique one or two word signal that either person can use to stop the triggering conversation with the agreement that at that point you're both going to, and you kind of quickly agree, okay, we'll pause for just, you know, 5 minutes or, you know, just whatever the number of minutes is. You just make up a number of minutes that you intuit will be adequate. During that pause time, you use that to calm yourself down, to do some of the practices that we teach people in the book, like actually like yogic breathing or different kinds of calming and grounding and centering tools. These are all in the book, or you may have some of your own favorite calming tools. And also you fill out a little self-reflection statement that helps you connect into what is the fear underneath this reactive behavior that I had, like that impulse to run out of the room or that impulse to punch something or to start screaming. So, you know, whatever the impulse is, what was underneath that? What are the feelings? And so during that pause and that calming period, you look more deeply. We do a compassionate self-inquiry process where we look inward so that then when we fill out our repair statement and come back to talk to our partner after the pause, we're going to say something that really connects with our partner's heart and is really an expression of my deeper feelings and needs. Because that's what you were trying to get across originally, is what I need is, but you weren't saying it in a clear enough way. So we get you to say it in a way your partner can hear it. So you'll get what you need.
We are talking with Dr. Susan Campbell, co-author of 5-Minute Relationship Repair, and discussing the triggering. What might help that is, and this is the portion of the book that I found to be very interesting, and it is chapter 11, and it said, clear the air on a regular basis, because some people might get squeamish by this, saying, oh, for gosh sakes, this again, we're going to sit down and we're going to talk about, you know, the same thing over and over. But I think it has a lot of validity in clearing what's going on so that it doesn't get built up. Can you tell us a little bit about clearing the air on a regular basis?
Yeah. Most people build up a lot of unexpressed feelings in their relationship. You know, we have busy lives. We have the kids or the finances to handle or whatever, and we skip over these little glitches in the communication or these little frustrations, and they can build up and create walls between two people, whether it's parent and child or a relationship that's, you know, more of an intimate romantic type. And so if you depend on just naturally finding the time to clear all that stuff, you're probably going to fail. So most of us need to set aside a dedicated time. Like most couples find once a week is good enough, unless they're really in an intense period of growth, where you would actually say, when are we going to do our clearing practice? And then you would sit down, and sometimes it helps to even have a special space in your house that's kind of sacred space or a special safe place where you know when you go into that space, even if it's a space you use for other things at other times, mm-hmm. you know that if it's your clearing time and space, you're going in with the attitude of, I want to reveal some things to my partner that I didn't get to say, so they will see me better, so that they will know my needs. And it's also a way to help yourself accept feelings that you might feel a little embarrassed about or shy about speaking, because you know it's a safe place to do that. So one good clearing, there's lots of different clearing practices. The one that we have in the book, 5-Minute Relationship Repair, is basically, if I had that conversation to do over, you know, you look back on some conversation where you said something that either wasn't as conscious or as true as you realize later you could have been. So you say, if I had it to do over, I would have told you, instead of criticizing you mm-hmm. for not listening to me, I would have told you that I was triggered and, you instead of saying, you never listened to me,
right.
You know, I'm sorry I said that, I would have told you I was triggered and the look on your face just brought up an old memory of how Dad didn't listen to me at the dinner table or, mm-hmm. or most any time. And mm-hmm. what I really needed was just to feel that I matter to you. So I'd just like to ask for a little reassurance right now that I do matter to you, that sort of thing. So that's one form
yeah.
of clearing.
And you have
another good one that's so much easier than that,
yeah.
even when you don't have triggers, is just asking your partner, is there anything I've done in the past week that has created distance between us?
Yeah, that's
and you,
good.
And that way you're inviting your partner, rather than depending on your partner to deliver things, you're kind of inviting your partner and giving them permission to say something that might be difficult. And then you say, is there anything I've done this past week that has created closeness between us? So that you kind of get a balance of the bad news and the good news. And you both take a turn doing that. And mm-hmm. both of those practices take less than 5 minutes.
Yeah, and this is the one definitely that I think works both with, you know, your work relationships, family, and friends. And I'm the reason this hits home with me is that a couple of years back, I had a 20-year friendship that she just sent me an email out of the blue saying she didn't want to be my friend anymore after mm-hmm. a 20-year friendship. And I keep thinking to myself, if there would have been some clearing, if she, you know, either I had approached to try and help to say, what am I doing? Or she would have been able to express to me, then it might have. So that's why I think that this clearing one is really important in all relationships.
Yes, you can avoid those surprises like you're fired or I want a divorce or you're not my friend anymore.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, even in work relationships, it's good to go and ask your boss from time to time, you know, how am I doing? Or if you're a boss, go and ask your employees, you know, I used to do this with my building trades workers, because I have a lot of remodels. I'd say, how's my management style work for you? And they always loved being asked that, and they usually had something to say too, that helped me.
Oh, yeah. People love ask when you ask for their opinion. But
yeah, but it gives them a chance to not harbor those negative
yes.
feelings. Like if you're a boss, you know,
uh-huh.
I teach work team relationship skills too. And, you know, people will harbor negative things about you, and they'll gossip about you in the workplace, but if you go and ask for how your style works for them, they get to say it directly to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little safer when you ask versus yeah. waiting for them to come. And then they're not going to gossip about you behind your back. So
yeah.
there's lots of advantages to regular clearing.
Well, Susan, when do we know it's time to walk away? Because sometimes there are relationships that can't fully be repaired to the point where someone stays together or someone stays in a job or someone stays in a friendship. How do you know when to walk away?
Okay, I'm going to give you a two-part answer to that. The first part is, I would say, if there's a strong reason to be together, like you have kids together or, you know, finances or joint life that you've created over years, I would say please try the 5-minute relationship repair tools first, because these are beyond. They're simpler and deeper than anything else out there. This is truly state-of-the-art. And it's simple, it's effective, but it does take a certain amount of caring about the relationship to even want to do this. So there's that. Try these tools. But I also have another book in which was called Truth in Dating, and it's about how do you. There's two good chapters in my Truth in Dating book, which is available at SusanCampbell.com, that talk about knowing when and how to end it and how to end things in a good way so that you don't leave with a bunch of unfinished business with the person. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I say in that book is when you've stopped learning, when there's no more growth and learning, when there's not enough connection between the two of you to really feel like you're in the same world, like if your worldview is so different, but you've really tried to express yourself with all these tools and you just keep missing each other, it may mean that you really are very different levels of consciousness, different worldviews, and that it would just be not advisable to try to adapt to one another, because one of you would be kind of stepping down your level of communication just way too much.
Right, right. But let's give it the...
So that can be in there.
Yeah, but let's give it the good college try first with 5-minute relationship repair.
You should give it the try first, because there's so much learning that you may not think that you can learn, or that you may not think your partner can learn.
Absolutely. Well, we have come to the part of the show where we do our real life three, our RL3, three silly, goofy questions that tell us a little bit more about you, Susan. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Here is our first question to you. What remains undone that you have wanted to get done for years?
Well, I think the main thing for me right now, honestly, is preparing for death. And I figure I've probably got about 20 or 30 more years before I die, but I'm already starting to think about it. Mm-hmm. And I want to deepen my meditation practice in order to really feel my connection with the big picture, the big one. And I'm a pretty deeply spiritual person and an explorer of all those inner spaces that I don't know that may or may not be called consciousness. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to call it, but I think I need to prepare for death so that I can die consciously, because I think death is a very important transition.
That is one of the...
That's a very odd answer.
No, that is one of the
most... listeners, but, if you're... I'm in my 70s, and, the body's starting to fail me in certain ways, although I'm in, great shape. So I can feel the impulse of life going out of me. And I think it's a very interesting part of life, actually. Don't worry, you guys who are younger. It's super interesting to watch this body die slowly.
Susan, that is probably one of the most interesting, thought-provoking answers that we've received during the RL3. So here we go to question number two. You are transported into any family on TV. Where are you going and who are you in the family?
Oh, wow. Family. My goodness. All I can say is my family of origin was the most fun family, and I wish we were on TV. I mean, we were always joking around. We had a high level of self-awareness. We could see somebody's weakness. Like, my brother was a very greedy person around food, and so we just called him the food machine. I mean, you had to watch what was on your plate when he was around, And, everybody had a little nickname, I don't have a TV family that I'd rather have than my own family of origin.
Lovely answer. Well, and the third and final silly question is we find out your fantasy name. And the way we do that is we take the name of your very first pet and then we add it to the street that you grew up on. So what was the name of your very first pet?
Thomas Jefferson.
Thomas Jefferson?
It was my cat when I was a baby. But we called him not just Tom, but Thomas Jefferson.
And what was the street you grew up on?
Becker.
Thomas Jefferson Becker, it has been a distinct pleasure talking with you today. And you can check out 5-Minute Relationship Repair at SusanCampbell.com. This is the time. Pay attention to those that you truly love. Thank you so much, Susan, for being with us today.
Thank you, Lisa. It was great fun.